Thanks, Steve. Thanks, all the panelists. I think you've heard a lot that will persuade you that in this panel on science, we've found out, unfortunately, too often, logic is for losers in the political process. And you also heard a good bit about what are some of the villains that we're dealing with. Julian Simon, some years ago at an Earth Day thing, Earth Day Symposium, stated something that I think we all ought to keep in mind, that the people who are promoting these kind of policies in a true sense are enemies of humanity, and we need to keep that to the fore. We've heard how any environmental risk in the current politicized environment becomes and trumps any other kind of risk that mankind has, that in a sense, no matter what we do, we're going to find a risk out there that justifies intervention. If eating doesn't cause the mouse to cause problems, then inject them, as Steve suggested. If mice don't work, then try some other species, rats, armadillos, who knows, platypuses. Something out there will succumb to the thing. And if parts per billion don't work, parts per million, parts per thousand, if that doesn't work, get a ton of the stuff and drop it on the mouse. That'll generally do it. In that process, the only finding you can have is that there's some form of scientific risk. The risk of ALR are counted. The risk of not getting adequate fresh fruits and vegetables gets neglected. The risk of global warming are trumpeted. The risk of global warming policies, suppressing of energy use throughout the world, are ignored. The only risk the current system can envision is a risk that we underregulate, that we fail to suppress freedoms in the economy enough. We see science distorted into policy science, distorted into junk science. Why does that happen? You get a scientific result, and you heard Steve talk about it. A preliminary, non-definitive, non-representative piece of science, immediately it is rushed into prints and headlines across America, television stations triumph the risks, the new risks that we've just discovered. Environmental establishment makes sure that pressure is put on politicians, and politicians and bureaucrats are entrepreneurs too, and all too willing to rush to act to save America from this horrible new threat. Public policy gets changed. And then the tragedy is, having now, in a sense, swept over by hysterical political science over the bar of public indifference and now resting in the bay of regulatory oppression, we abandon the science debate. We stop arguing the science. We find the science channels closed down. It's much more difficult to get a debate on science policy, on ALR, on unleaded gasoline, on pesticide policy, on global warming today than it was before. They don't want debates on these things. They have policies in place. Why go back and upset the apple cart? And that battle, that abandoning the science battle, is critical because science is one of the only things mankind does to help us determine what is rather than what we initially thought it was. Richard Lindzen, who many of you know, another climatologist, in a movie that some of a documentary some of you saw, Greenhouse Conspiracy, at the end of it was asked, well, what does this all pretend? And he looked at the camera and I think quite importantly said, science is a tool of some importance. We politicize it to our peril. A time may come when we need to know what really is true. And if we have totally discredited science, we'll have no way of knowing. And we're at risk of doing that. We have very little time left. But I think we ought to go ahead and ask some questions because getting all of us on a panel like this to observe our time limits is a little like herding cats. We did a fairly good job, but we are over time anyway. We have a question from Donna, I think.
For either
get
Fred,
in line and use the camera, the thing.
For either Fred or Patrick, I'm from St. Louis, and even though we have a Democratic-controlled legislature, we have continuously voted down all of, quote, the solutions to the global warming, the emissions as they've dropped those particles for the area of St. Louis. And every year we are facing the threat of the federal government. Well, now we keep getting closer and closer. We're now months away from the federal government shutting down St. Louis. And it always appears in the newspapers that it will be that we will not have our highway funds or will there be, there will be no more economic development. Now this is outright blackmail. Can anybody elaborate the steps that they are planning to take for our city? Because so far, our Democrats and Republicans have stood up to this, have refused to have a reformulated gas, to have all of the new emissions, and so far they've stood up I want to know, what are their threats and what can we do about it?
That's a very good question. It's not per se a science question. Let me just very quickly say, the use of federal funds as a blackmail, or I think more appropriately, a greenmail threat to communities is being used to leverage bad science into policy in a lot of places. There's a lot to say about that. I don't think it's science per se. Maybe we ought to go on to another question. We'll talk about it at the break. So, okay. Next.
David Kendrick, and I think this question probably might be best answered by Dr. Malloy. It would be helpful to comment on the controversy where the EPA is trying to phase out asthma inhalants that have CFCs, supposedly on the grounds that there are alternatives without CFCs. I can tell you from personal experience with my son, the CFC inhalants worked much better.
Well, I can tell you from personal experience, I'm an asthmatic. And the little inhalers that asthmatics use, which are very important breathing, and if you've ever been short of breath, right, you know how important they are. Until now, they've been powered by CFCs, and you get a nice little blast that helps you breathe immediately, and I can't tell you what a relief that is. Well, EPA has it in its head that, and this is part and parcel of the whole CFC ozone depletion myth, which actually Fred Singer could probably tell you more about. But they think that the propellants in the asthma inhalers are going to help destroy the ozone layer, even though it's actually a very small percentage of CFCs in use. And even if the theory was true, it would probably be a very minimal intrusion. Well, EPA has recently promulgated a new regulation banning CFCs from being the propellant in inhalers, and they've replaced it with other propellants, which, for my money, don't work as well. You really have to suck hard on your inhaler, and it's just not the same thing. But the worst part of this, I'm a smart guy. I can learn how to suck harder, even though I'm not going to like it. The inhalers are a lot more expensive now, and there's a lot of the increase in asthma is occurring in inner city kids that can't afford more expensive medicine. And that's what EPA is doing. They're really putting a burden on these inner-city kids where asthma is increasing and costs are skyrocketing. So,
it's incidentally, you should know that this is one of the alleged reasons is this: if we let any use of CFCs anywhere for any purpose, we open the doors to contraband CFCs being rushed in. Just for the record, those of you who are concerned about national border security, the second largest form of contraband in the United States right now are smuggled CFCs, freons, to keep your old car's air conditioning working. And so we've created a whole new class of criminals, and in the process, we're prosecuting children asthmatics. This is EPA policy.